One of the hardest parts of getting older is feeling like something's off in your body, but not knowing exactly what. It's not just aging. It's often your hormones, too. When they fall out of balance, everything feels off. But here's the good news. This doesn't have to be the story of your next chapter. Hormone Harmony by Happy Mammoth is an herbal formula made with science-backed ingredients designed to fine-tune your hormones by balancing estrogen, testosterone, progesterone, and even stress hormones like cortisol. It helps with common issues such as hot flashes, poor sleep, low energy, bloating, and more. With over 40,000 reviews and a bottle sold every 24 seconds, the results speak for themselves. A survey found 86% of women lost weight, 77% saw an improved mood, and 100% felt like themselves again. Start your next chapter feeling balanced and in control. For a limited time, get 15% off your entire first order at happymammoth.com with code NEXTCHAPTER at checkout. Visit happymammoth.com today and get your old self back naturally.
I'm Kathy with a K.
And I'm Kathy with a C.
And this is Killer Destinations. Today's destination is Napa, California. Founded in 1847, this city of almost 80,000 residents is surrounded by the Napa Valley wine region. The early inhabitants of the area were Native Americans, and its first settlers were Spanish missionaries who planted the first grapes in 1839. The Great California Gold Rush in the late 1850s brought a flood of people to the area looking for their fortune, which led to the first expansion of the city to meet the needs of the newcomers. Just a few years later, the Great Silver Rush began in the valley, with miners installing large mines to extract the metal. Due to its location, Napa's economy is largely driven by tourism. As a result, a significant portion of jobs in the city come from the wineries. There are more than 400 of them in the valley, restaurants, hotels, and other hospitality industries. But even as Napa embraces its future, it continues to celebrate its past. The downtown area is known for late 1800s and early 1900s architecture, existing alongside a riverfront promenade with shops and restaurants and an art scene anchored by the Napa Valley Opera House. The city of Napa has always been an enviable place to live and work, but envy is one of the seven deadly sins. And in 2004, two young women fell prey to a killer who had envy foremost in their heart.
It was Halloween night 2004, and roommates Leslie, Adrian, and Lauren were handing out candy to neighborhood children. After the doorbell stopped ringing, the women headed to bed around 10:30 that night. Leslie and Adrian slept in adjacent bedrooms upstairs, while Lauren's bedroom was downstairs near the back of the house. Just a few hours later, in the early morning hours of November 1st, Lauren was startled awake. She wasn't sure what had awakened her, so she lay in her bed and listened. That's when she heard a scream coming from one of the upstairs bedrooms. She immediately got out of bed and stood in her room, trying to figure out what she was hearing. She opened her door and walked into the hallway. Then she heard someone running down the stairs. So she ran out the back door and into the backyard. Once she was outside, however, she was suddenly terrified that she'd open the door for the intruder to follow her. She hid behind bushes, but the intruder never came out the back door. Instead, she saw someone leaving through a window on the first floor. She never saw who the person was. She just knew it was a man. Once the intruder had left the house, Lauren ran upstairs. She first went into Leslie's bedroom and saw Adrian and Leslie lying on the floor. It looked like both of them had been stabbed multiple times and there was blood everywhere. Adrian was still alive, but just barely. Lauren ran out of the house, got into her car, and used her cell phone to call 911. When police arrived just minutes later, both of Lauren's friends were dead.
Can you imagine that?
I can't imagine.
And knowing that somebody had been up there, ran down, you still go back up there, like, to make sure your friends are okay.
It was brave of her.
Absolutely.
To go back up. Yeah. You know what? This does remind me of the Idaho case.
And we'll have an update for you guys on that one soon.
Yeah. The horror of it. From the beginning, the police did not believe this was a random attack. Either Leslie or Adrian or both were specifically targeted by the killer.
Adrian and Sonia was 26 years old and grew up in the nearby town of Calistoga. And Kath, she'd already beaten the odds once. When she was a teenager, she survived a nearly fatal accident. 10 years earlier, at the age of 16, she was in a horrific car crash. The car rolled at least 3 times, and every time it rolled, Adrian's head hit the pavement through her open window. Her mother said that it was a miracle she survived. She was in the hospital for months and had suffered serious head trauma and significant facial lacerations. She would actually require plastic surgery, Kathy, on her face to minimize some of those scars. But Adrian was a fighter, and a few months later, she was back in school, even though she was still suffering from temporary brain damage. Slowly, she regained her cognitive and athletic skills, and she was back on track to achieve her goal of becoming an engineer. When she graduated from high school 2 years later, she received a scholarship to attend Cal Poly San Luis Obispo, or as we like to call it, Cal Poly SLO.
Exactly.
From which she graduated 4 years later with an engineering degree. After graduation, she got a job as an engineer with the Napa Sanitation District, which is not a trash district.
I would have thought it was regarding trash as well.
In California, it might be true in other states, it's wastewater, as in bio water.
We know what you mean.
As in poo water.
We have the visual.
It was around the same time when she got the job with the Napa Sanitation District that she started dating a man named Christian. Now, for the second victim, Leslie Mazzara, which, by the way, it's pronounced Mazzara, Kath, on some places, but I saw a video in which she introduced herself, and instead of Mazzara, she pronounced it Mazzara. So, we're going with her. She'd only lived in California for about 7 months at the time she was killed. She had been raised by her mother with her two older half-brothers on a farm in the rural town of Anderson, South Carolina. But Leslie wasn't a sheltered small-town girl. She was gracious and poised and comfortable in every situation, skills she'd honed when she successfully competed in beauty pageants. And Kath, she was stunning, and everyone who met her said that she had that certain je ne sais quoi that drew everybody to her. And you and I have both met somebody who has that.
Yeah.
And it's me. Why is that funny? Leslie won the title of Miss Williamston and went on to compete in the Miss South Carolina pageant, where her platform was raising money for abused children. Now, after Leslie graduated from the University of Georgia, she wasn't sure what she wanted to do. She worked briefly as a paralegal, but her mom, who'd moved to California, suggested that Leslie go to California for the summer and get a job at one of the wineries and just kind of take a break. Now, this coincided with Leslie breaking up with a very serious boyfriend and decided that's what she should do. So she moved out to Napa and quickly got a job as a concierge at the Nibom Coppola Winery, which is well known for one of its owners, renowned film director Francis Ford Coppola. Shortly after moving to Napa, Leslie found a room to rent with Lauren and Adrian.
So Adrian's best friend since high school was a young woman named Lily. And Lily was interviewed, Kath, and she told 48 Hours that everyone had a theory on why these girls were murdered. There were rumors about the two women being involved with drug rings, and maybe they owed somebody money, and people speculated that maybe it was a mob hit because the women who lived in the house all had Italian last names. And also they talked about the Coppola Winery, where Leslie worked, and basically said, hey, Francis Ford Coppola made mafia movies. He had to have mob connections, that kind of thing. So there was all this kind of speculation. Lily, who was also living in Napa, told detectives that she and Adrian spent hours talking about their love lives and that Adrian had a rocky relationship with Christian, the young man that she had started dating after she graduated from college. Lily was engaged to marry her high school sweetheart, Eric, and Adrian wanted to marry her boyfriend, but her boyfriend wasn't ready yet. Lily said Adrian would go to work crying and would tell Lily and their friends at work about how unhappy she was with Christian. As a result, Lily and their friends started to see Christian in a negative light. Just hours after Leslie and Adrian were brutally stabbed to death in their home, detectives knocked on the door of a house just one block away. It was the home of Adrian's boyfriend, Christian. According to a 2005 episode of 48 Hours, Christian said he was fast asleep when the police pounded on his door. He said several detectives were on the porch and immediately asked him if he had any weapons in his house. He said he had one and told them it was in his bedroom. It was a knife. Officers took the knife as evidence, along with clothes and bed sheets, and asked him to come to the station for questioning. At the station, Christian said that his relationship with Adrian was rocky and they had been arguing for weeks. He said she wanted a commitment, but he wasn't ready. However, he did see Adrian the night before her murder. She dropped by his house after handing out candy to the neighborhood children and stayed for a few hours, but left at about 10 o'clock. Christian insisted it was the last time he saw her, and he also insisted that while the relationship had its problems, he had never touched a woman in anger. However, without a solid alibi, Christian remained a possible suspect.
As we said, detectives did not believe this was a random attack and initially felt that either Leslie or Adrian, or both, were targeted by the killer. But as police gathered evidence, a clearer picture emerged that led them to believe that Leslie was the intended target. Napa Police Detective Todd Schulman was convinced that the killer knew his target and where she slept because when the killer entered the home through the kitchen window, he went right for the stairs and headed to the bedrooms. And based on the wounds on her body, Leslie was likely the first victim because it appeared she was attacked while she was sleeping. Additional evidence showed that Adrian may have been awakened by Leslie's screams and ran into her bedroom to help. Detective Schulman said that the blood evidence spoke volumes about what happened in Leslie's bedroom. Investigators were able to develop a picture of where the girls were during the attack and how they fought for their lives. And Kath, Adrian's best friend Lily, who again was her best friend since high school, she told 48 Hours that she went to the viewing of the body after Adrian was killed and said that it looked like she fought hard for her life because you could see bruising and cuts on her hands. And then she noticed something that struck her really hard. She knew that Adrian hated wearing turtleneck sweaters, but she was wearing one in the casket. And so she knew there was a reason they weren't showing her neck and chest. Now, as it turns out, fortunately the killer was hurt during the attacks and left drops of blood on the blinds as he exited the kitchen windows. The detectives hoped the DNA would lead them to the killer.
So because the evidence seemed to indicate that Leslie was the intended victim, they looked more deeply into her life. And when they did, they discovered a young woman who had a strong effect on men. She was the type of gal who lit up any room she walked into, and despite living in Napa for just 7 months, she was already incredibly popular. Leslie dated a number of local men, and at the time of her murder, she was seeing two guys, an older man that police never named, and a younger man named Bo, who Leslie's friends said she was getting serious with. According to these same friends, the older man had seen some flowers that Bo sent Leslie, and he became furious. Leslie's friend Katie said, when this older man found out about the flowers, he had this very dark, evil look on his face. It was clear that he was furious. Both of these men provided a DNA sample, and neither was a match. Napa police wanted to talk to every man Leslie had been involved with to see if they could match any of them to the DNA the killer left behind. And of course, based on Leslie's beauty and allure, detectives thought it would be possible that Leslie had come into contact with someone who became obsessed with her. Detectives also searched through Leslie's computer and found a recent email from an old boyfriend she had met in Alaska 6 years earlier when she was 20 years old. When the old boyfriend spoke with investigators, he said that he'd proposed to Leslie, but that she had turned him down. One of Leslie's best friends actually told 48 Hours that a lot of men fell hard for Leslie. She said that guys loved her, and even if they weren't dating, they would buy her things. So, like, I get that.
You so do.
I know.
It's been uncomfortable sometimes, hasn't it?
So uncomfortable. It's so
How
hard.
Do you explain some of this to your husband?
But she said Leslie never asked for anything. It was like they liked her and they wanted to give the world to her. And this friend said that the family of one of Leslie's boyfriends sent her on a cruise, and another man even bought her a car.
I can't imagine that life, because how uncomfortable is it to be like, thanks for the car, but we're just friends,
right,
and so you
exactly.
need to take it
we're
back.
Just, we're just friends.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But do friends give friends really nice cars?
I don't think so.
Yeah.
You've never given me a car. How dare you?
Now, detectives also spoke with this friend about Leslie's history with boyfriends. As Kathy said, she was one of Leslie's best friends, and they knew she'd have the most information. So the friend told detectives something that piqued their interest. She said that on the night Leslie was murdered, Leslie had told her that the father of one of the men Leslie had broken up with in South Carolina tried repeatedly to reach her on her phone. Detectives now wanted to talk to this man and his son. The ex-boyfriend was an attorney named William, and he and Leslie had been in a serious relationship and had lived together before breaking up. Kath, this was the breakup that prompted Leslie to move to California in the first place. The friend told detectives that Leslie really did love William, and at one point had confessed that she could see herself married to him. But the reason the relationship ended was because William's dad made her skin crawl, and she was super uncomfortable around him.
Can you imagine how bad that has to be to make you break up?
With somebody who you could say, I could see myself married. For your dad.
Yeah, but your dad's a creep or whatever. I don't know what.
But if it made her skin crawl, I'm going creep.
Right.
I'll support you on that one. And could you imagine, like, she had to have been thinking ahead to, like, what happens when I get pregnant?
Oh,
what happens
totally. When we have kids? Yeah, you're trapped.
Yeah, totally. Now, when William and Leslie lived together, William's dad, who, by the way, was also named William and also a lawyer, he often called the house. But the dad never called to speak to William. He wanted to talk to Leslie. And Dad William started calling so much that she just stopped answering the phone on the off chance that he was the one calling. So Napa detectives flew to South Carolina to question William Sr. about the recent phone calls to Leslie and to determine if he was in California on Halloween night when Leslie was killed. Sr. denied he was involved in the murders and insisted the calls on Halloween were just an unfortunate coincidence and that he was not infatuated with Leslie.
Yeah, he's like, oh, P.S. I don't like her. I just call her.
Yeah, no infatuation. We're besties. He and his son, Leslie's ex-boyfriend, each agreed to provide a DNA sample. Kath, ex-boyfriend William, was not a match. And his father was not either. Although detectives struck out after collecting the DNA samples from these two men, they still continued to gather DNA from the men Leslie knew in Napa.
Are you feeling overwhelmed by hormonal changes? If you're a woman, you're not alone. With over 1,000 hormone disruptors in our environment, it's no wonder things can feel out of balance. On top of that, natural changes like PMS, menopause, and other life stages can leave you feeling tired, irritable, and trapped in a constant battle with your body. But here's the good news. You don't have to suffer through it. Hormone Harmony by Happy Mammoth is here to help. This herbal formula fine-tunes your hormones, balancing estrogen, testosterone, and even stress hormones like cortisol, which can contribute to weight gain, racing thoughts, poor sleep, and more. With over 40,000 five-star reviews and a bottle selling every 24 seconds, the results speak for themselves. Ready to feel like yourself again? For a limited time, get 15% off your first order at happymammoth.com using code NEXTCHAPTER at checkout. Visit happymammoth.com today and get your old self back naturally.
Check engine light on? Take the guesswork out of your check engine light with O'Reilly Veriscan. It's free. Ask for O'Reilly Veriscan today.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly Auto Parts.
So as police continued to investigate, Leslie and Adrian's family and friends began to slowly move forward with their lives. So just a few months after their deaths, Adrian's best friend Lily and her boyfriend Eric, who'd been together for almost 8 years, decided life was too short. You never knew how many tomorrows you had together. Lily and Eric had already scheduled their wedding once, but Lily got cold feet and called it off. And this decision haunted her because their wedding was originally scheduled for November 1st, 2004, the day Adrian and Leslie were brutally murdered. The ceremony was supposed to have taken place in Hawaii, which meant that the women would have been out of the state on Halloween night and her best friend would not have been killed. Lily told 48 Hours that Adrian's mother attended the wedding and read scripture during the ceremony. And in her best friend's honor, Lily played Adrian's favorite song, She Will Be Loved, and I assume that's by Maroon 5. And although the day was joyful, Lily said she couldn't get beyond the fact that there had been no arrest in Adrian and Leslie's murder. Lily said that somebody must know something. somebody would have had to notice their friend acting strangely or having bruises and cuts, anything. To her, it did not seem like someone could just walk away from murdering two women and act fine.
You know, it's the what ifs, right? That you're always haunted with. What if I hadn't called off the wedding? What if I hadn't done this or that? You know, you hear people who are like, I was supposed to get on that plane.
Right.
Or someone went on that trip instead of me, and so they died.
Like, yeah.
You shouldn't have guilt for it. It's easy to say that.
Yeah.
But you do.
I know.
It's survivor's guilt.
Yeah. But by the following summer in 2005, police were still baffled. At that point, investigators had contacted more than 1,300 people. They started with Adrian and Leslie's inner circles and worked outward, starting with the people closest to the victims, including boyfriends, then moved on to friends, and then other friends, and then more friends.
And then friends of friends.
Exactly. All of the 218 men who gave DNA samples were ruled out as suspects, including Adrian's boyfriend Christian and all of Leslie's former boyfriends. There were still no answers as to who murdered the women.
Then, in September 2005, almost a year after the murders, police decided to make public a piece of evidence that they'd held back. Police had located several cigarette butts outside the house, cigarettes that had been smoked down to the filter. Police theorized that the killer stood outside the house smoking cigarette after cigarette, working up the nerve to go inside. The reason this was an important piece of evidence was that the killer smoked an unusual brand of cigarettes. On the bands of the cigarette butts, there were distinctive markings that matched those of Turkish Gold, which was a variation of Camel cigarettes that had only recently been on the market. Detectives hoped that making the cigarette brand public would elicit calls that would lead to the identity of the killer. The reason for releasing this information now, Kath, was the crime lab results had finally come in, and DNA found on the cigarette butts matched the DNA of the killer's blood left at the scene. And just 5 days later, police made an arrest, and everyone close to the women who were killed were stunned. It was 26-year-old Eric Koppel, Lily's new husband. So, Kath, basically, Adrian was killed by her best friend's husband. But it wasn't a tip from the public about the cigarette brand that led them to the arrest. On Tuesday night, September 27th, 2005, Eric walked into the police station with wife Lily and other family members. After being questioned by detectives, early Wednesday morning, Eric was arrested and charged with two counts of first-degree murder. And a press conference was scheduled for later that day. While community members were relieved that the killer had been caught, those closest to Adrian and Leslie wanted to know why it took so long to catch him. Now, remember, police had said that they looked at the women's inner circles, the people in closest proximity to them, but they never even interviewed Eric. Police said that they had left phone messages for him, which he ignored. Now, at a press conference a few hours after Eric was arrested, Chief Melton said that he thought that after the announcement of the cigarette brand the killer smoked, Eric believed that he was about to be identified as the man police were looking for and turned himself in. When asked if Eric had confessed, the chief would only say, I guess you could say that he confessed. He made admissions that led detectives to believe that he committed the murders.
So he was intentionally vague.
And Kath, at the press conference, there was also really what I consider to be a shocking turn of events, because as it wrapped up, Adrian's mom, Arlene Allen, walked over to the television cameras and spoke to the reporters. That's a hard thing to do. You know, usually the families are being kept away from the press, but clearly Mrs. Allen wanted to get something off her chest.
And the fact that she had been a reader at their wedding.
Well, one of the other things she had said, not to the press, but in a separate interview, was that Lily was really what got her through losing her daughter, right? Lily had been her daughter's best friend since before high school. So they were always together, and that to her was a connection. And so she was afraid that once Eric was arrested, that Lily would pull away from her, thinking that Mrs. Allen blamed Lily for what happened, which she insisted she did not. So I think that that was a big part of the fear, too.
I had a friend die young, and her mother loved seeing her daughter's contemporaries, you know, our friend group at various functions and events. And for a few years on her birthday, we would take her mom out. And so I could see Mrs. Allen wanting to maintain her connection to Lily because their relationship was so deep. Just like my friend's mom, I saw her recently and she's like, I cannot believe, you know, how big your kids are and this and that and blah, blah, blah. I love seeing it. I love seeing you guys. You know, it's your daughter. It's important to maintain those connections.
And you need to see them grow up and imagine what she would have been like grown up.
That's exactly what it is.
So at the press conference, she talked about Eric. And Mrs. Allen said that Eric was always very friendly and polite, even though he was somewhat remote. But she had such a hard time believing Eric was responsible because in all the time she'd been around him, she had never felt any kind of negative, dangerous, or sinister vibe from him at all. And how can somebody like Eric have been the one responsible for killing her daughter? Despite Chief Melton's statement at the press conference that said, you could say Eric confessed, you know, the one where you said he was vague about everything, at Eric's arraignment 2 weeks later, he pleaded not guilty to 2 counts of murder and 2 counts of special circumstances, and he was held without bail. Then it was announced on December 5th, 2006, so this is more than a year after Eric was arrested for the 2 murders, Eric Koppel agreed to plead guilty to murder in exchange for having the death penalty taken off the table. He agreed to a sentence of life in prison without parole.
Just 1 month later, at his sentencing hearing, in a written statement, he apologized to the families of Adrian and Sonia and Leslie Mazera. He said he had been suffering from depression and abused alcohol in the months and years before the murders. At this hearing, Adrian's mom, Mrs. Allen, finally got her chance to confront him. She said, Eric, you knew Adrian. You know me. And Eric, I know you. You are a man who violently stabbed to death the best friend of the woman you loved. That is not love, Eric. You cannot love Lily and bring a knife into Adrian's home and stab her again and 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 yet again. According to 48 Hours, as Mrs. Allen drove home the brutality of what Eric did, he sat stone-faced. But his demeanor started to change when the final speaker stepped up to the podium, his wife Lily. Lily began her statement by saying, I wish with all my heart these events had been avoided, and expressed her sympathy and regret for her friend's murders. But then she shocked the crowd when she spoke directly to her husband and said, Eric, there is nothing you can do to make me love you any less. And then Eric spoke. He told the families, I am a broken man, a man splintered by a penetrating awareness of my own potential for wickedness. While I cannot fathom the full extent of the anguish that I have caused, I recognize that my sinful deeds have inflicted terrific agony on a number of people. The words evade me to articulate the depths of my sorrow. And while the judge only allowed the first minute of Eric's statement to be recorded, journalists in the courtroom revealed that he said that he was afraid his relationship with Lily, which he called the singular ray of light in his black world, was in peril of collapsing. In his mind, Eric believed Adrian was poisoning Lily's feelings for him.
District Attorney Gary Lieberstein provided a few more answers for those who still didn't understand why the tragedy took place. He revealed that it was jealousy that led Eric to kill his wife's best friend. Eric wanted Lily to be there for him, and he resented her other friendships because they took away from their time together. D.A. Lieberstein said that on Halloween night, Eric got so drunk that an angry Lily refused to spend the night with him at their apartment, and so he found himself all alone on what was supposed to have been his wedding day. He felt his relationship was slipping away. But Kath, when he talked to detectives about what happened, he told them that his memory of what happened after leaving his house was somewhat sketchy. He claimed that while he had some memory of leaving his house and taking a knife, he didn't know how he ended up at the house where Adrian, Leslie, and Lauren lived. He also remembered smoking the cigarettes out front and entering the house through the kitchen window, but didn't really remember what happened once he got into the house. The DA also said that Eric told detectives that after the murders, he remembered going home and starting a fire in his fire pit and burning his bloody clothing and shoes, but did not remember the murders. He also didn't know what he did with the knife he used to kill Adrian and Leslie. After the sentencing hearing, Leslie's mother refused to dwell on her grief and said, "Leslie's life speaks for itself. Her 26 years were full and rich and productive, and she was a gift. I'm so grateful that I got to be her mom and that she brightened our lives. I miss her a lot." Adrian's mom spoke about her memories of her daughter. She said, "I sometimes expect to see her walking in the door. I see her face clearly beside me, and then I understand just what a loss is." Don't forget to download,
listen, and delete.
I'm just trying to make an impact so they'll remember the delete part. Oh, no, wait, that's the wrong part.
I know.
Download. Download.
Listen and delete.
Download, listen, delete. Or download, listen,
delete.
Your choice, but download. Please. Like Kath said, we actually are on a time clock now. We've got 7 months. We really, really want to keep doing this. We love it. It's so much fun. We love talking to all of you, everyone who sent us cases. I mean, as horrid as the topic is, we just love what we're doing. But we have to draw the limit at 4 years if we're still not making enough money to exist.
Because exactly.
working full-time and doing this is killing us.
It's killing us. So we'll let you know in 7 months whether we're done or not.
Check engine light on. Take the guesswork out of your check engine light with O'Reilly Veriscan. It's free. Ask for O'Reilly Veriscan today. Oh, oh.